This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Virginia and NC State baseball fans are thrilled to death, as they should be, with a really, really impressive weekend, which we've discussed in hour number one. Our two-a-days include North Carolina, which we've already talked to Adam Lucas about, and we will include NC State later in the program, talk about the Wolfpack football, and we will conclude our two-a-days tomorrow with Clemson and Miami football discussion. So there you go. There's your hook for tomorrow, in addition to what happens tonight with NC State and Vanderbilt baseball. The Hoos take on Mississippi State on a Tuesday night. But Mr. Durham, since we are presented by New York Life, it is our due diligence on Mondays to produce as well the best and worst of the weekend.
Yes, sir. The list, by the way, for best is fairly significant this week. The list for worst, minimal.
Which is good.
How's that?
That's good.
Oh, yeah.
It's a perfect weekend.
Always like that. There you go. All right, let's start with the Wolfpack. Shout out to Chuck Kratz, who's watching this morning. Chuck, NC State, 3-0 in CWS openers all time. Latest conquest. Beat the big Stanford Cardinal. Number 9 got to NC State in the black unis out there, Pack, on Saturday, and getting after it with Johnny Butler and Luke Tresh and Reed Johnson on the mound.
Yeah, I won't say anything about the black uni, but nevertheless, I will tell you, NC State, it was their first win against Stanford since dirt.
Since dirt.
We haven't had a since dirt reference in a while, so I thought I'd throw that one in there today. But, man, State
That's jumping, good, brother.
6-0 before the Cardinal had their first hit. Perfect way for Elliott Avent to enjoy a wonderful whiskey steak and head into a championship round coming up on Monday night. Good stuff.
There you go. Let's go to item number two on the best of the weekend. That's Johnny Butler, who got the party started early and didn't stop. 5 RBIs on Saturday and a career high for Butler as NC State posted the big victory.
Yeah, you mentioned how quickly that one got out of the yard. And when he hit it, I thought, all right, maybe it'll find the gap. No, that's going to find the stands, which is even better. But that set the tone, and NC State was off to the races.
Yep, sure were. And so big win for the Wolfpack. Now, best of the weekend, here's one way to look at it. Not the Pac-12. Conference of Champions was 0-2. Arizona losing in extras to Vanderbilt, and, of course, the Cardinal losing to NC State.
Yeah, those are
there you have it.
Two seeded teams, too, by the way. Let that be emphasized. These national seeds the committee came up with, same group that put Alabama in the tournament. These are national seeds we're talking about, taking L's. And by the time off campus starts this afternoon, which is in between games, somebody from the Pac-12 is going to be on a big plane heading west. I don't know which one's going to be. It's going to be either Arizona or Stanford.
Yes.
Somebody's going to be two in barbecue by the time off campus starts this afternoon, which will be about 5:30. Two in Q from the Pac-12.
Somebody going to be on a big old jet airliner, as Steve Miller Band once sang.
Somebody's heading west before the Pac-Man gets on radio this afternoon. Just saying. That's a guaranteed lock. Weather permitting, of course.
Just kind of laid the law down there, didn't you?
Yeah, weather permitting, of course. And let me tell you, Wes, something. I hope the SiriusXM execs don't take offense to this, but there's going to be some white dude sitting here in the basement with dogs eating barbecue from Lexington, rooting for about a 17-inning game. I'm rooting for about a I'm going to root for about like a 5-hour game today. Seriously, about 4.5. How about this? I'll settle on 4.5. You guys get done at 6:30. I'll fill for about 10 minutes, have my barbecue, and you guys can go about your business out there in Omaha.
Let me just tell you that the quick elimination game is oftentimes the one that takes the longest.
Oh, no question.
Because the grind is fully embraced
everybody,
by both teams.
That's exactly right. Everybody, oh, all hands on deck.
Everybody's available.
That's right. And that's this is why I love, from a professional standpoint, today and tomorrow, because my radio show gets squeezed by baseball, and I don't have a problem with it in the middle of June. Now, football, hey, we're going 3 hours for football. This baseball season, right. Hey, I don't mind I don't want one of these, one of those strike out 23 guys like we had in Mississippi State and Texas. That game was too quick last night. What I want today out of you Pac-12, Pac-12 loser bracket guys, here's what I want out of you. I want everybody loser bracket guys. LBGs, that's what they are out there. LBGs in the Pac-12, loser bracket guys. I want all of you to play. I want pitchers. We're going to the bullpen. We want mound discussions. We want 15 instant replay reviews. We want that game to go about 4.5 hours. So, Pac, can you come on at 6:30 and fill till 6:40? Yes, I can. That's what we're looking for tonight. And tomorrow, when we have the orange,
be like
orange,
doing
all orange loser guy bracket, Tennessee and Texas. When you guys get together tomorrow afternoon, let Ryan McGee come out of the bullpen and help you guys write a cool story or something. Talk about his days at Tennessee. I want all you burnt orange and big orange folks tomorrow to go about 4.5 hours. That's the game plan, Russ. Ryan McGee special. About 4.5 hour game. Be perfect.
Of Texas and Tennessee. Got
burnt
it.
Burnt orange and big orange. Somebody score. Somebody,
there we go.
Somebody round third base between one of you two teams. Somebody. Anybody. Please score. But not often.
Anybody. All right. Best of the weekend continues after that small dissertation on length of college baseball today between Pac-12 schools with Matt Lynch and Andrew Abbott, who combined for 13 Ks against Tennessee on Sunday.
There we go.
The Virginia pitching was outstanding in the ball game. And congratulations to Brian O'Connor, who will join us coming up at 9:15. Abbott, I thought, was sensational. I just thought he pitched it well. Tennessee started chasing fastball up, and then he would come back and sling it across the dish with that tight slider that Ben McDonald talked about, and that was about all she wrote for Tony Vitello in the orange, and the big orange from Knoxville, who fall yesterday. Logan Michael's story is only going to get better in the next 24 hours before Virginia plays Mississippi State tomorrow night. His only home run of the year, his first in a couple of seasons, comes in the College World Series, gives Virginia a 1-0 lead. His dad in the seats on Father's Day, diagnosed with pancreatic cancer 3 years ago, his sisters, the rest. I mean, it's exactly the script you would hope you could write. And it's as good as it gets. It's as good as it gets. And so congratulations to Logan Michaels and to the Michaels family. The ACC, the little old ACC, didn't have one of those national seeds, Pac. Lucky we got teams in the tournament. Won 2 6-run games in the College World Series this weekend.
Yep.
Which begs the question, what was the committee doing?
Maybe they were meeting up with Mark Emmert, talking about name, image, and likeness and what they were going to do. But I don't know. But it was a great start for the conference. There is no question about it. And NC State, like I said, Johnny and the boys, they set the tone from the get-go in Virginia. Yep. Despite the wind blowing out, according to Ben McDonald, 6-0 against Tennessee. Only the third time the balls have been shut out all season long.
All right. U.S. track and field Olympic trials continue out in Oregon. The swimming finished up over the weekend in Omaha. In fact, the Olympic trials in swimming and diving finished about the time the College World Series starts. So the Omaha airport was the hottest spot in America for about 36 hours, to be honest with you. Three ACC athletes from Virginia, Paige Madden, Alex Walsh, Kate Douglas, have all qualified for Tokyo.
Very cool.
So our congratulations to them as best of the weekend. We look forward to following their progress in the Summer Olympics in Japan. Now, a side note, the NBA has gotten down to its Final Four pack. I don't know if you realize this. I know you follow the league, but 13 former ACC players are in the conference finals. The Clippers and Suns, Drew Brooks' Phoenix Suns opened to a 1-0 lead in the Western Finals yesterday. And we have the upstart Atlanta Hawks and the Milwaukee Bucks, who, contrary to popular belief, do not have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, John McLaughlin, or Oscar Robertson in their starting lineup. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Atlanta Hawks are going to be in the Eastern Finals. Milwaukee has 5 former ACC players on the roster. They're 13 total among the 4 teams left to go in the NBA. There you go. That's all best of the weekend.
Is Junior Bridgman making shots for the Bucks? Huh? Is Junior still doing his thing? No.
No, and neither is Paul Pressey or Sidney Moncrief. So there you go.
Got those worked in. Can we throw in one extra since you brought up the NBA? How about a shout-out to former NC State star Nate McMillan having a pretty good weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Got to give Nate McMillan some love.
Enloe High School, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
Big time. Big time job coaching the Hawks. No doubt.
Meanwhile, the Charlotte Hornets, just for the record, we're getting ready to celebrate our 20-year anniversary coming up next season since the last time we won a playoff series. We got that going for us. That and a lot of lottery picks. That's what we got going for us in Charlotte.
Pack, you made the playoffs.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't make the playoffs?
Right.
We had 20 teams in the playoffs. I mean,
all right.
Fuller, Chester, you and your son, we would be a threat to make the playoffs, Wes. Saying you made the playoffs in the NBA is kind of like, yeah, that's really cute. It's like Mark Emmert having another subcommittee meeting. That's great. What have you accomplished?
Yeah.
Not much.
Quickly, let's shift to worst of the weekend before we move on to Bennett Conlon of the Daily Progress in Charlottesville. Can a raccoon showed up?
Yes.
In Omaha, in the radio booth at the College World Series, a raccoon.
How cool is that dude right there?
Can we see that one more time, please?
I am pro raccoon.
Look at this.
How cool is that guy?
Whoa!
I love that. And let me tell you, when you see one raccoon, there's 50 in line. If those folks in Omaha think that that's the only one upstairs, they would be wrong. That would be false, presented by Dish. When there's one raccoon, there's more than one, I can assure you.
Other worst of the weekend, Pack.
Those folks in Tennessee, let me tell you what, those Tennessee baseball fans, that's good eating.
Don't do it. Three super regional games.
Where's
one
Ryan
game
McGee?
For Virginia and the
Ryan
College
McGee
World
get his
Series.
Ryan McGee hey, get his gun
Pack,
out there.
Stop. All right. Three super regional games in Columbia.
I guarantee if Marty Smith was there, if Marty and McGee were out there, I tell you what, there'd be a new special on the menu. Marty and McGee were out there. I know McGee's out there, got his pom-poms out for Tennessee. But if Marty Smith was there, that would be on the menu this weekend on the Marty McGee show.
Three super regional games, one College World Series game for the Virginia Cavaliers, and one of the worst of the weekend, we still have not seen the big donkey throw it yet.
Man, he's a celebrity.
June 8th against Old Dominion. Big donkey's been on ice. Ice with dipping dots probably, but nonetheless, Stephen Schock has yet to throw.
No. How about that? Almost threw his arm out.
He's done.
Kicking South Carolina out of the tournament. We hadn't seen him since.
Well,
what's going on there?
I got to tell you what. He's done more media than LeBron James in the last week, and nobody has seen him throw a ball yet.
Let Big Donkey get a hold of that raccoon. He'll go straighten that raccoon out. Donkey get in that radio booth.
All right, let's get to a break. We're going to go live to Charlottesville when we come back. Bennett Conlon is going to join us. Story he wrote about a year ago on Logan Michaels and his dad, along with the storylines this Virginia baseball team is giving us. I mean, Abbott starts, Lynch closes, Maybe Bennett knows where the big donkey's sitting in Omaha and when we'll see him. When we come back, Packer and Durham presented by New York Life.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I couldn't believe it, right? His swing is not for that, right? But the ball was up a little bit. He put a good swing on it. I've seen him hit a few balls out of the ballpark in BP, but, just so excited for him. You know, history has told us in the last decade in this ballpark that it's really difficult to hit balls out, but certainly in these first three games in Omaha, things have maybe changed a little bit. And it was, when it finally left the ballpark, I couldn't believe it. I was just so happy for him.
Brian O'Connor, who, by the way, will join us about an hour from now. Really a feel-good story. Yep. And if you want to go and dig a little bit deeper, I suspect that if you read Bennett Collins' column, you will absolutely know what we're talking about because he now joins us live on the program. Good to have him back on the show. Bennett, first of all, good morning. Timing is everything, right, in terms of that story and what you wrote. And lo and behold, here we go. What a feel-good story it is for the University of Virginia baseball.
100%. Yeah, Logan Michaels, his dad, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in the spring of 2018. I wasn't even sure if he was going to come to Virginia, considered a little bit maybe not coming to Virginia just because he wanted to potentially be with his dad. His father encouraged him to come to UVA. He did. And then obviously yesterday on Father's Day, second home run of his Virginia career with his dad in the stands in Omaha was super impressive and really cool for their family.
Bennett, in some ways, the story you wrote about a year ago kind of touches all the emotions, I think, of what Logan has been through. But to see it kind of personified on this big stage, what do you think that means to his dad? I mean, I know his dad told, I think, a Charlottesville television station they got the whole family there. Rarely do you get the whole family there now, that kind of thing. But Omaha gave him an opportunity to gather. Then Logan goes out and does that. His dad was over, as you saw, probably overcome with emotion when he got the ball. I think you're just sitting at home, you're overcome with emotion. But take us through kind of in talking to his dad and talking to him, what you think that was like yesterday?
Yeah, well, I mean, once he initially got the diagnosis, he probably wasn't supposed to live more than 2 years. So for him to just be in Omaha and be alive and be able to watch his son play baseball is really defying the odds and impressive for the whole family. So to have another Father's Day just being around, I think, means a lot to him. And then to have Logan play the way that he did was super impressive because Logan Michaels will admit, as you showed with Brian O'Connor, he really doesn't hit home runs. I mean, he's a guy that when the ball left his bat, I was like, oh, that's probably a fly ball out. Then the Tennessee left fielder turned and wasn't going to get the ball. And was like, wow, he just hit, the first home run of his season, second of his Virginia career. You see his dad go crazy and it's awesome. They're a close-knit family, and Jeff Michaels really loves when Logan has success. He's had obviously a lot of success with how he's been able to, fight pancreatic cancer. But for him, he gets the most excited when his son does something pretty cool.
Yeah, the video is awesome. Your story was great. Bennett, do you get a sense as far as this team goes that, hey, we've kind of seen this magical carpet ride in 2015 and, here they get off to a lousy start and all of a sudden they're kind of grinding and nothing ever seems to be easy for this team, especially the way they put themselves behind the eight ball in the regional and in a super regional. Now all of a sudden, hey, they win the first one. What a unique concept for Virginia. But do you get a sense that 2015, 2021, the similarities here between Virginia baseball and maybe, just maybe, winning another national championship?
They've got the similarities. They're going on an impressive run and, yeah, I'm surprised they won the first one yesterday. They seem to like it when they lose early and put their backs against the wall, but they were able to actually pick one up and play some good baseball. So they're confident. They're really confident. They pulled on memories from the 2015 team. Brian O'Connor tells them all the time about old stories of winning regionals and super regionals and advancing in the College World Series. So they're pulling on that information and that knowledge from Brian O'Connor because they don't have it, right? They haven't been on this stage before. They don't have that kind of experience, but Brian O'Connor does and some of the coaches do, so they can ask them what it's like and learn from them quite a bit. And they've done that and it's helped them. And you know, their confidence really changed when Brian O'Connor at the Georgia Tech series, they were 4-12 in the ACC in ACC play. And he told them, we got to win this series and then every series the rest of the season to have a good chance of making the NCAA tournament. And they kind of liked when that that goal was in front of them and they had to understand what they needed to do. They were able to actually do that. They lost one of the series, but made up for it with a sweep. And, you know, in the regional and super regional, they lost those first games and realized pretty quickly, all right, we have to win out if we want to keep our season alive. So when they know what they need to do, they seem like a pretty goal-oriented team that can have a lot of success.
Bennett, we saw Andrew Abbott go to work yesterday. Fantastic effort. Wyatt came in, did the job to close it down. I look at Griff McGarry, and it got discussed a little bit on the broadcast yesterday. Griff McGarry will be tough for Mississippi State. That guy, I mean, what he showed you in Columbia is that he's got kind of a new lease going. You know, you look at his regular season numbers, they're nowhere indicative of how good he's been in postseason.
Yeah, I mean, Griff McGarry, I think when he steps on the mound, he doesn't really fear failure at this point because he had such a rocky start to the season. I mean, he had a start at VCU. He didn't get an out in the first inning, and they pulled him in a midweek. So for him, he really can't pitch worse than that. I mean, when you have a game like that, that's the worst you've pitched maybe in your career, you know it can't get worse. When you can throw 99 miles an hour, which he can consistently with his fastball, I think that gives you a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. So he's feeling like he's an elite pitcher, and he's shown that in 2020 when the season got canceled. Before that, he was pitching great. So he's had success before for them, but really the only thing that can stop Griff McGarry is Griff McGarry. When he walks batters and struggles a little bit, that's the only time he has much of an issue. So as long as he can avoid the raccoons, they don't get down on the field, I think he'll have a pretty good chance to have some success against the Bulldogs.
We're hoping those Tennessee fans take care of that raccoon. They know they know where to handle all that nonsense. By the way, win 750 for Brian O'Connor yesterday. You cover the Hoos. You know, it's a pretty interesting collection of national championship coaches at the University of Virginia. Where do you think he fits in the mix?
He's right up there. He's had a ton of success with them, and I know they all talk a bunch and share knowledge and things like that. It's funny. I think someone asked him about maybe how he shares some knowledge with other coaches at this time of the year, and he's like, I don't do it too much now just because I've been here so much myself that I know what I'm doing. So I think there's a certain stage where Brian O'Connor knows what it takes to win, and he's right up there with some of the best Virginia coaches, especially considering what he inherited and how he built this program. I think, you know, that's one of the impressive things with some of these Virginia teams. Lars Tiffany obviously took over a really proud lacrosse program and took it to another level. And what Tony Bennett's done at Virginia, Virginia fans are obviously huge fans of his for good reason. He's done a good job, incredible job building that program up. And I think that certainly adds to O'Connor's legacy, just what he's been able to do, building the legacy of the entire program, building it up to being a national contender that it is today, where it's been to five College World Series all under his watch. He's one of the best in the business for sure.
You know, Bennett, it's not that long ago. I mean, about 20 years ago, this program was on life support. There was talk that Virginia might not play baseball. And then they did hire Brian O'Connor. Dennis Womack did a great job just kind of keeping Virginia afloat and competitive in the ACC at times. Seth Greisinger led them to the championship in 1996, which was a huge Cinderella story at the time. To say that Brian O'Connor saved Virginia baseball, I don't think that's too far a stretch, do you?
No, I think what he's done with the program is it's special, and to have them become relevant after not really being all that relevant. You look at the facility changes now where they've got an elite baseball facility and softball followed. So I think they've made a commitment to sort of those bat and ball sports a little bit, and Brian O'Connor's probably the number one reason why with what he's been able to do. And Virginia fans really care this time of year when he gets the team into the postseason. He gives them a chance to make it to Omaha, and obviously his connection to Omaha makes that pretty cool too. But yeah, Virginia fans care about this program because of Brian O'Connor and because of the success that they've had over the last decade plus under his watch.
Mississippi State tomorrow night, for folks that stayed up and watched the Bulldogs and Longhorns last night. Boy, there's a lot of pitching, a lot of K's, a lot of whiffs. What do you expect tomorrow night?
It should be a good one. I think for Virginia, it depends a lot on Griff McGarry. If you get what you've seen in the super regional and regional from him, they'll have a good chance of winning. They've got a really fresh bullpen because you only used Abbott and Wyatt on Sunday. So they've got pretty much everybody available except those two, which makes them pretty helpful. Yeah, I mean, they've got options pitching wise. Mississippi State's a really good team. They're competitive. They do a good job. I was talking to some people a few weeks ago or a few days ago, and they had mentioned that Mississippi State can score without hitting home runs, which if the wind is blowing in, that can be really valuable. So they can score, get guys on base and stringing rallies together. So going to be a really good test for Virginia. I think they'll have a good chance if Griff McGarry can be strong. You know, they've got different arms available. Maybe we'll finally get a Steven Shock showing. I know he's built up some fame here, and he's done the same thing I've done, which is just tweet the last few weeks, but we'll see if he can actually get out there and throw some innings for him.
Well, here's the thing. In some ways, Shock got the stage that he needed here, Bennett. Let's be honest, right? I mean, we told Brian O'Connor this last week. Nobody needed Omaha more. Omaha needed Steven Shock more than Steven Shock needed Omaha in some respect. But now there is this little sense that, you know, you show up in Omaha, now you got to deliver. And there, while it's been mostly successful for Shock, there have been some dips, as you know. But when he gets the ball, he will have not touched it. We just ran it. He hadn't pitched since what? The Old Dominion series? The Old Dominion Regional. I mean, he didn't appear in the Super. He didn't appear Saturday or yesterday, rather. I'm kind of curious as to what he'll bring to the table when he finally does get to the rubber.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing yesterday was a foul ball hit to him in the dugout that I don't know if his glove was fully on, but he ended up dropping it, like went into the stands, and he slammed his glove on the dugout. So he did get a little bit of attention yesterday, at least from the people there. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he can eat some innings and actually get back out there for him.
So my final question, do you think Virginia can spend as much time in Omaha as they spent in Columbia, South Carolina? That's my question for you.
Oh, my God.
I think they can. I mean, it'll be interesting, and I'm getting used to the hotels, so I'm ready for it. I think it'll be something they can do. They've got the pitching. If McGarry can pitch well, you've already got the Abbott win, which is a better start than the regional and super regional for Andrew Abbott to pitch and get a win on the mound. So they've got the depth to do it. They've got the guys to do it. And if they get through Mississippi State, I feel pretty confident that they'll make a really, really legitimate run at the national title. So Tuesday's game is big. If they get through that, Griff McGarry pitch as well. And they've still got some options from, you know, Nate Savino, Mike Bassel, some of those guys to start future games. I think they're going to be a really tough out as the season progresses. And they're confident. They think they can win the national championship. And they've thought that all season, even when they had those dips. I think most people doubted them, but internally they've never doubted that if they could figure it out at the plate, which they have now, and the offense is kind of rolling, that they could make a pretty deep run and do something special.
All right. Bennett Conlon covers Virginia for the Daily Progress in Charlottesville. We appreciate it. Be well. Thank you as always.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bennett Conlon, Virginia tomorrow night, Mississippi State in the primetime game from Omaha in the College World Series over on ESPN. When we continue, we will take a look at kind of the developments on the college football playoff expansion. The move to 12 this week shifts to Dallas for more meetings with that management council. Quick reminder to you that coming up on July 2nd, the takeover begins on ACC Network. Each school in the conference gets a day showcasing the best games and moments in their history. Look at that. It runs from July 2nd through the 17th. It's right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. School takeovers. Stay tuned when we come back. More on the college football playoff expansion, name, image, and likeness, and more before we get to the 9 o'clock hour. Packer and Durham presented by New York Life on a Monday.
Packer and Durham. This is Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life.
Mountain Lion. Tell you what. Yep. Those folks in Omaha get a hold of Clifford D, put him in the radio booth. It'd be the end of the raccoons. Straighten that out in 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, he was in the hunting and gathering process yesterday, Pack.
That's what I'm saying.
We were hunting and gathering yesterday. Yeah, yeah. He would certainly qualify as somebody that would be able to take care of the raccoon one way or the other.
Let yes. Clifford go out to Omaha to the radio booth with those raccoons. It'd be Tennessee fans with new hats for that afternoon loser leave town match against Texas. Can't get mad either because Davy Crockett wore those raccoon hats, right? Crockett supported those bad boys. There you go. Tennessee fans, they know what's right.
Thanks to Bennett Conlon, Adam Lucas, who've joined us so far. Stay tuned. Brian O'Connor, Joe Giglio going to join us before we're done at 10 o'clock this morning here on Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life. We've got somewhat of a collision course here in college athletics. Marcus said, you get full credit here, you said this like 3 months ago. What we know is the landscape of college athletics is getting ready to dynamically change. I think I'm paraphrasing what you said, right? The landscape is just getting ready to change. We're in the middle of it, or at least at the front end of it, because next week, name, image, and likeness goes into effect. And the NCAA is in an interesting spot there, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. The other thing that kind of coincides on the similar track is the emergence of the college football playoff expansion to 12 teams. And last Friday, everything kind of went, I would say, according to plan. This week, it goes to the Board of Governors and the highest level for review and conversation and questions and things of that nature. And if it clears there, then it goes into September for ratification. It'll be ratified, and then we'll go forward with it probably the fall of 23. January 24 would be the first time we play 12 teams. The expansion, Mark, to me, I don't think it ever becomes public if it wasn't going to happen, right? Do you feel the same way?
The biggest hurdle is tomorrow in Dallas, because I think the commissioners understand where they're going, but until the president / chancellors give you the thumbs up, you know, it's still going to be in play. I think the conversation, here's how I'm going to phrase this. The number 12 has been the most important number in college football in the last 10 days. 12 is the number of teams where the playoff can expand to. In my opinion, tomorrow, when the presidents get together, the number 12 isn't going to be the most important number discussed. The number 17 is going to be the most important number. And what I mean by that is, will the presidents be comfortable in this day and age of safety and health and mental issues and everything else during the COVID issue and everything else with college football? Will the presidents be comfortable knowing that you could have two teams potentially playing for a national championship who will be playing their 17th game of the season? If the folks in the room tomorrow in Dallas are comfortable with 17, then I think this is a green light special. Gone. We're going to go to 12.
Right.
But that will be a major conversation piece, in my opinion, tomorrow, because that number, in my opinion, will be more important than the number 12 tomorrow.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. I think that's the thing that group is going to have to get their arms around, because even though it only impacts a minimal number, right? And it's somebody that would have to go all the way through the process and get to the end. Championship game in your league, and then the full scope of the playoff to get to the 17th. There is, by the way, this conversation about reducing the number of regular season games, that's not happening. 12 is going to stay. That 12 regular season games, that's staying. And people say, well, why is that staying if we expand the playoff? Because those 12 games are revenues for those particular institutions. Here's the other thing, too. If you wonder, well, is it always going to be about the money? Yes, it is. It is going to be about the money, because that's what's driving this anyway, is the business of college football and the business of college athletics. And I thought when he announced lacrosse and women's gymnastics last week on our program, Dan Radakovich talked about those revenues, Pac, and how important they were. David Coburn, when he was with us, 90 days ago, remember when he said it would be imperative they be shoulder to shoulder at Doak Campbell this year because of the appropriations from the state of Florida and the legislature and things like that in terms of athletic budgets? Yes. So everybody's got to get comfortable with some things that maybe they're not going to be comfortable with. Mark brings up an excellent point about 17. To me, I think everybody has to understand college football has been a business now for a long, long time. There's a lot more money involved in it now. And yeah, that's a big driving force in this whole deal. And how many people did we have last week talk to us about the B word, Pac, when it comes down to what the ultimate payday may be if this expands?
Well, that's all fine and good. And listen, say it all the time. You want the answer to a question, follow the money. You'll get to the answer. But tomorrow, the people in the room tomorrow are the ones that a year ago, when we started talking about COVID, how are we going to are you in a position? Are you comfortable? Are you safe? Mm-hmm. There were a lot of presidents and chancellors that were not. I mean, I don't need to remind you where we were a year ago. Were the Big Ten,
right,
the Pac-12. They were not comfortable playing football due to safety and health concerns, the mental well-being of the student athlete. And that is a trend that exists at the very highest point. And that's what tomorrow is, that room. So All of a sudden you're now saying, hey, here's an opportunity. Everybody seems to be on board with the number 12. But I'll go again and tell you, the number 17 will be discussed. If the people in the room tomorrow are comfortable to say, listen, we can play 17 games. You could have two teams playing for a championship and they have played 17
games.
Opportunities. If that's okay, we're going to go to 12. 12 is going to happen in college football. If tomorrow there is a bump in the road, if there is going to be one, I think that the number 17 is the bump in the road, where all of a sudden You could have some movers and shakers, the presidents and chancellors that go, this is not what we're in the business of doing. Is there a way? Go back to the drawing board and see if you can limit this to 15 like we have it now for somebody who won a national championship. I don't know where it's going to go. Again, I'm not privy to those conversations, but I think if you're a college football fan, that's something worth keeping an eye on tomorrow in the conversation. That if everything's rubber stamped and we're good to go, then you know exactly where we're headed. If there is a delay, I suspect 17 will be the delay. We'll see.
All right. Remember now, this board of managers is made up of 11 university presidents and chancellors. They have the ultimate authority on the college football playoff. That was one of the building blocks that those five guys, those five commissioners, and Jack Swarbrick put together when they created the CFP, in conjunction with some of those presidents and chancellors who have since either retired, moved on, and that committee has evolved. Jim Clements of Clemson now is one of the representatives on that committee, as we know. That group ties itself to the management committee, which are the 10 FBS commissioners and Jack Swarbrick. So there is a little clarity that we need to make sure everybody kind of understands in this part, that the presidents and chancellors, there are 11 of those, and then there are 11 members of the management committee. And that's the group that kind of had the working group within it that then created this proposal to 12 teams and the college football playoff committee. I think it's going to be a fascinating 60 days, 70 days, if you will, for the world of college football if we can get to this 12-team deal, Pack.
No question. I mean, we're talking about the most popular sport in our country that's getting ready to get a makeover potentially on which we have never seen before. We've seen, it goes from wherever we were in college football 25 years ago to the BCS, to the BCS to a playoff. It was like, whoa, we're going from 2 to 4. How about 4 to 12?
Right.
So this is a huge deal. But tomorrow is a big hurdle, a really big hurdle, because if it gets approved tomorrow, we're going to go to 12. Now, the game's on. But if there's a delay, I suspect, like I said, the safety issue is going to be front and center. That will absolutely be discussed tomorrow amongst the really smart people. And we'll see where it goes. Again, it's a fascinating time that we're living in. No question.
All right. Sit tight. We're going to go from one issue to another. The college football playoff committee expansion, the format expansion to 12 teams. For potentially January of 24, to name, image, and likeness, which is next week. Oh, next week, if we're not careful. Mark Emmert has kind of fired his last bullet, if you will. And I'm not sure it's going to hit anything, but we'll tell you what it is next on Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life. Ironically, we play the boss because this segment involves the boss. No, not that one. The one we deal with. The one that gives you a good laugh on a Friday afternoon with a memo to colleagues.
5 o'clock news dump.
To colleagues. Colleagues. What was that Friday, Wes? What was that from Mark Emmert this week?
I don't know. NCAA President Mark Emmert on Friday afternoon told the organization's more than 1,100 member institutions that he will seek temporary rules as early as July to ensure all athletes can be compensated for their celebrity status, with a host of state laws looming and congressional efforts basically on hold, because when they go to Congress, it becomes more than name, image, and likeness. It then becomes health benefits. It becomes pay. It becomes all the things that people who are apparently elected to office think are readily available to the 360-some-odd Division I basketball-playing schools in this country. Emmert has urged members to pass legislation that would make it permissible for the first time for college athletes to earn money. Now, all three divisions – see, here again – this is part of the issue, Pac. All three divisions are going to try and have some name, image, and likeness rules and restrictions lifted here. The D1 Council is going to meet Tuesday and Wednesday and could act on a proposal. Commissioners, however, including Jim Phillips of the ACC, are looking for a minimalist plan here to regulate name, image, and likeness. The issue is we are almost out of time, and the NCAA is going to try and throw something on the wall. They should have listened to commissioners a long time ago, in my opinion, Pac. They didn't, and now they kind of waited on Congress. Congress wants this to be more than that, more than name, image, and likeness, and here we go.
I am going to read to you, because I kept Mark Emmert's colleagues email that went out on Friday. I'm just going to read you a paragraph. All right. I'm not ad-libbing. I'm not going off script. This is verbatim. This paragraph I'm going to read to you from Mark Emmert tells you everything you need to know about why we're in the position we're in. This is from Mark Emmert. Quote, anytime I hear the word if, I say this on radio all the time. If a caller calls up and says, Pac, if I hear the word if, flags go up immediately. Because if means you haven't got the job done. You haven't got the job done right. As a leader, as a team, a fan, whatever. If. Pac, if. I hear if and it's just like, if. Here's the paragraph from Mark Emmert. Verbatim. If, however, I mean, those are the first two words. If, however, NCAA rule changes are not in place by July, please know that I will work with our governance bodies to develop temporary policies that assure student athletes that they will not become trapped in such circumstances, that will all have name, image, and likeness opportunities. Nice. I have directed my staff, not me, my staff, to create proposals to this end. We will provide more details next week as this approach is reviewed by NCAA Board of Governors and the divisional governance bodies. That is what came Back. Down the pike on Friday. And that's all you Back. Need to know.
Pack. He said, please.
I'll say this for the 1,000th time on radio or television. If you are weak at the top, I don't care what right. your business is, you are bound to fail. Period. There's nothing more you need to know than that. And that paragraph, mm-hmm. which came from Mark Emmert, verbatim, I just read it. If, however, hey, dude, You've had 2.5 years to get ahead of the problem. Mm-hmm. And now you're talking about, I've directed my staff to create proposals. The heck with proposals. Roll up your sleeve and get something done. I don't need to know, well, we'll provide more details next week as this approach is reviewed. I don't need any more reviews. I don't need any more subcommittee meetings. I don't need you in Washington, D.C. I don't need you to put out another email. I don't need another if or however or therefore. What I need from you, Mark Emmert, is to go to work and get something done. Period. Exclamation part. I mean, it's just enough. July 1, you knew July 1 was coming in 2019. And here you are putting an email out after wasting everybody's time in Congress, people calling you out going, shouldn't we question the direction of this organization? And your answer is, enough of the reviews and subcommittee meetings and corner office donut retrievals. Go get the job done. That is your deal, dude. Enough. I'm sick of talking about it on radio and television. It's like nothing will get done with this guy. It's impossible unless it's laid in his lap. And that's not going to happen.
It's clear to me, as someone who's followed this story, that he simply was waiting on a congressional bailout.
Right.
And he didn't get it.
Right.
And he wasn't going to get it.
Right.
Because previous performances in front of Congress were not good enough. They were nowhere near good enough. So when he went back at the end, because he knows good and well the circumstances and the consequences, and sought the congressional bailout, he did not get it. So now July 1 is going to come, and he is counting on a D1 council to bail him out for his membership. And by the way, he's only bailing himself out at Division 1. He's not bailed himself out at D2 or D3 because, again, the NCAA wants to comprehensively address these issues. Again, we talk about the Division I Men's Basketball Championship being the holy grail of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, and it is. But there are major differences within D1. There are cataclysmic differences between D1 and D3. But yet here we are, an organization trying to govern all three levels, PAC, on a rule that's really intended for what? 120 schools, maybe? 130 schools, maybe, of Division I play? Amazing.
ZL stands for zero leadership.
Yep.
And there you have it.
Bad scene. So buckle up, kids. We'll be at July 1 next week. We'll see what happens between then and now. When we come back, we go to the Power Hour. Brian O'Connor is about 15 minutes away with Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life. Joe Giglio at 9:30. Our two-a-days in football continue with NC State, and we'll also dig in on some Wolfpack baseball, too. But Logan Michaels and his dad, Jeff, write an emotional Father's Day script in the Cavaliers' shutout of the Tennessee Volunteers. Next on Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life.
Packer and Durham.